Oh, we're ready. Yeehaw. We can go ahead and get started. Well, thank you, everybody, for attending the very last session time slot. We were a little worried about whether or not we might just be presenting to the camera. So thank you very much for attending. My name is Michael Green, and this is Charles Joy. We are in the Windows Server CAT team. So we have a very interesting job of providing customer feedback back into engineering. And whenever there are scenarios where the existing products can start to integrate into a solution that maybe was never originally in scope, but customers come along and say, hey, I've got a problem to solve. Does it look like these products might fit in a more interesting way? We often come along and either participate with someone like MCS or even go in by ourselves and just kind of help with the architecture, help to come up with new interesting ideas, and then bring those back to Redmond. And this was what we're going through today is a case of when that actually happened. So the scenario that we're going to walk through, obviously leveraging service management automation and PowerShell GIA and service provider operations, this is going to be a very PowerShell heavy session. So we're going to go through basically building an operations framework that introduces some really good principles of least privilege and combines that with the latest and greatest of automation to build out a scenario. And it really would be applicable either to service providers or the enterprise. I've talked through this with companies that are both enterprise and service providers and found that this will fit into a number of different scenarios. So as far as expectations are concerned, I know it's a 300-level session, but we will be going through a number of different PowerShell scripts and runbooks. So you can expect to see some code on the screen. Sometimes people expect that to be a 400-level session, so I always like to give people fair warning. The story kind of goes like this. So Contoso is a service provider of some type. You can see, you know, given the new logo, they're really trying to imply that they're going for a more secure identity. They're really trying to express solidarity. So it could be a PaaS environment, it could be IaaS, it could be even a SaaS scenario. Within this infrastructure, within this environment, you have all these different people who are actors, and we're going to discuss that a little bit. But you can imagine they have operators. So they have the architects who actually built the environment, but they probably have hired on some people who might take tickets from their tenants and say, I need to go make a change in their environment. It could be that they receive some alert from monitoring, and it's not something that they're quite ready to fully automate yet, so they just hand that off as a written SOP to someone who's maybe in an operations center, and they say, you're going to receive some instructions, you know, follow them step by step. If you see anything out of the ordinary, escalate to tier two, things like that. And they're a little bit concerned because, as Jeffrey often presents in the GIA sessions, what happens if those accounts actually get hijacked? Or what happens if someone tries to hijack the corporate environment to get access to the automation tools and then use those tools in a malicious type of a way? So if you're not familiar with either automation or the PowerShell Just Enough administration concept, we're going to talk about a fairly detailed, we're just going to jump into a fairly detailed level, I should say. So I just wanted to point out there are sessions that have now been recorded because it's the very last session at TechEd that you could watch later and catch up on some more of the details of how exactly Just Enough administration works. We probably won't go into the details of how exactly GIA works or why it was created, but those sessions have already happened and they've been recorded, so that information is available as a follow-up. The personas within this story, Contoso, I just want to synchronize in the terminology because what we find when we kind of present this concept is when we start throwing around words like provider and tenant, people say, explain to me exactly what you mean by that before we go forward. So when we're talking about Contoso, we're talking about the company who's acting as the service provider, meaning they're actually offering the hosting environment. Again, it could be PaaS, could be SaaS, could be IaaS, doesn't matter. It actually could just refer to the IT department within a large enterprise. When I talk about operator, it's the people that I was describing earlier. They've been hired on to work in the operations center. And most importantly, when I talk about tenant, that would refer to either in a service provider scenario, someone who's consuming services from this provider. So it could be that I'm paying for virtual machines to be run within a secure environment, and I'm paying for that access. And so I'm expecting some level of a value add to happen. It could be in a PaaS environment that I'm subscribing to an application that's available. And in an enterprise environment, it could even mean that at some departmental level, I go to a group who's providing services, virtual machines on demand and things like that, and I've got a self-service interface to go stand things up. But it doesn't have to be necessarily where I swipe my credit card. The concept of a service provider can kind of expand over into the enterprise scenarios as well. So this is a scenario we tried to figure out. And this really did happen. This was really a scenario that was presented to us. So whether it be service providers or enterprises, if they're acting as service providers, they know they want to protect that environment. In fact, in many cases, if you're a service provider, if you are looking for a niche type of a market, you've got data sovereignty expectations, and that might be how you differentiate yourself from other service providers. And so being able to protect that environment is really first and foremost in your mind. Those service provider environments always include applications. And it could be, it doesn't have to mean that it's an application that's being made available to the tenant. This even refers to applications like server applications that exist in the management infrastructure. So you can imagine Virtual Machine Manager, which is actually what we're going to utilize as the application in this story. I don't want to give those operators direct access as administrators into Virtual Machine Manager. I want to protect that as an application. PowerShell Just Enough Administration provides a really excellent method to operate a system without direct administrative privilege. And you'll see what that means. But basically, if you've attended the GIA sessions, it gives you access through a PowerShell remoting session to go in and make changes in kind of a blast container. And you're connected in, even if you don't have local administrative privilege on that file server, you've been granted some very specific granular abilities. And the context of the execution may be different than your logon. GIA actually uses what I'm calling machine local accounts, which is kind of an older term. But what I'm referring to is the account is actually local to the machine. As in, if I went into computer management and I went to the users section, I would find that an account is automatically created with a very long random password, and it's managed as a session account for Just Enough Administration. But that account is a local administrator. That works really, really well for concepts like file servers, where I need to be able to create new shares and manage access to different files. But if you're trying to also be an administrator over applications, either on that machine or somewhere else throughout your management domain, these local accounts are very limiting. So traditionally, the way that you would get around that is you would get into a GIA account. You might invoke some commands that you have access to, but first you would create a credential object using your network credential and then pass that into those remote commands. But that actually introduces another layer of complexity, because now you have to provide an additional layer of security over those downstream commands. To give an example, we're going to talk about Virtual Machine Manager. I may give my operators access to the commandlets for Virtual Machine Manager, where they could go in and get a list of virtual machines, create virtual machines, change properties of virtual machines. But they could also just open the console and bypass PowerShell and get direct access, right? So unless I'm going to lock down the firewall across all those console ports, which is restrictive for the people who are full level of administrators, it becomes kind of a tricky scenario. So we can illustrate that by saying applications don't always use machine local accounts. So how would we get around this? Our goal, obviously, is to enable application operators and be able to have them complete tasks. We don't want to give them full administrative privilege. The scope of this problem is we're going to approach this using PowerShell Just Enough Administration as the front end, and we're also going to use System Center Service Management Automation as the tool that provides the ability to complete these tasks, and we'll go into more detail. I called out earlier that there are sessions that introduce these technologies and go into a greater level of detail about how they work individually. But our expectation is that you've got a pretty good feeling for GIA, for SMA. So when we start going through these things, we're going to kind of dive right in. So let me switch over. The way that we're going to walk through this as a demo is I'm going to start off by saying this is what the solution looks like. And then we're going to pick it apart and start going through individual pieces so that you can understand how we built it. But the idea, obviously, this is PowerShell Web Access. We really wanted to provide a solution where A, it was accessible from anywhere. And B, when we say anywhere, we mean even beyond just Windows machines. So what if someone in the operations center is working remotely? What if their machine of choice happens not to be a Windows machine? How would they be able to get in and do work within a PowerShell environment? So I'm going to log in. Now I'll mention while this is logging in, demo user 01 is just an Active Directory domain account. It's not an administrator anywhere, whether it be on servers anywhere or within applications anywhere. What this is actually logging into is on one machine, we've installed the public preview bits for Windows Server 10, as well as the public preview bits for the next version of Service Management Automation. It's a server core install because SMA can be run as a headless environment. And we've enabled the role for PowerShell web access and given access to this user. So I've logged in. I can prove to you that this is accessible. I could open it up on my phone, but you wouldn't be able to see it from there. So that kind of defeats the purpose. Actually, start off with get-command. And I just want to prove that this is a GIA session. So I'm actually connecting in to a WinRM session. Normally, if I were to say git command on a current version of Windows Server, you would see thousands of commandlets, right? So in this case, I'm saying these are the only commandlets available to this operator. I might also say, for the purpose of standard operating procedures, that I want to make their life easy. So I call these contextual wrapper functions, which means rather than having the expectation that I could surface all of the SMA commandlets and expect them to know which runbooks do what and that they could go in and invoke those runbooks, I create just some PowerShell functions and I put it in something I call the operator module. That those operator functions, really all they're doing is providing a very friendly looking name on top of invocation of SMA runbooks. So you can imagine get-cloud-vm is really just kicking off a runbook that goes and gets information and returns it back. But the idea, when we first started talking about this in real-world environments, is they said, gosh, I don't know, for the people we've got in our operations center, they're pretty used to pointing and clicking. So I don't know if they're going to be able to follow something, you know, within a command line interface. And we said, well, what if even instead of having to understand how to operate the SMA commandlets or even having to understand how to pipe things and things like that, what if we just made it as simple as we could? You can run help, you can look at a list of commands, and whether you're following a document or figuring out on your own, it's going to be as simple as it possibly could be. And they said, yeah, I think they can do that. So this is what we started with. If I say get-cloud-vm, there you go. There we go. It'll take a second for this to run, and we're completely transparent, so we're not sure why that this first part is taking so long, other than it's running on the technical preview of the next version of SMA. So we're going to go back to the SMA team and say, hey, why does that first runbook take so long to start off? But what you'll see, what's happening now is this is a two-tier SMA infrastructure, and we're going to explain what that means. But you literally have a GIA environment sitting on an SMA box. That SMA box would be reaching into an SMA box inside of the tenant where it's going to do work. So you've got an upstream and downstream type of environment. What's waiting to start right now is just a runbook that has credentials, reaches into that tenant environment, and kicks off a downstream runbook, providing it information about what it's supposed to be doing. That's the one that's starting to spin up. Once it actually kicks off, you'll see real-time status presented back to the screen. When we did this as a proof of concept, and I'll explain how we would do that on current technology, we actually didn't have this initial kickoff issue, so it started off pretty quickly. Yes, sir? Yes. So what we've published is you can imagine that there's a firewall between the tenant environment and the service provider environment. This is a scenario where there's some sort of a value-added service being provided by the service provider, and the tenant is trusting them with some level of access. So if it is a truly isolated environment, it makes this type of thing much more challenging. It's not that it couldn't be done, but you would basically have to have something like a queue stored maybe in Azure where, you know, an SMA box within that environment that the tenant owns and manages would reach out and try to find out what tasks it should complete. It could be architected around, but it's a very good point. you would have access to the web service on the SMA box in the tenant environment from the service provider environment. But that's the only thing you'd have to expose is over SSL as access to the web service.
There was another question.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Oh, okay, great. The question for the sake of the recording was, wouldn't you have to open access into the tenant environment from the service provider? So,
good timing.
That timing worked out really well. So the this status is actually coming from the downstream SMA box. It's returning back. It's a lot more, it's much better to watch whenever it happens almost immediately. But it's returning back in real time and saying, yep, I'm actually running things. And then just to make it more interesting, the actual PowerShell module, what it's doing is connecting both to Virtual Machine Manager and to Azure, getting all of the virtual machines that match to a certain set of properties and returning all of that. So the idea is from this, maybe they're also an Azure reseller, and they're saying, hey, for this tenant, I want to find out all the virtual machines from just one command, as opposed to finding out what's in the public environment, what's in the private environment. So this is a combination of all those machines. So if I bring this back. There we go. Hey. There we go. So now we're going to go into a little bit of an overview of what makes this work, and then we'll go into the very specific details of how those tools operate. But the solution components, obviously we're using constrained administration. In this case, PowerShell just enough administration. We're also using SMA for automation. But I do want to point out, and I'll show you how to do this later, you know, obviously we're building this, as I mentioned, on the public preview builds, and that includes WMF5. When we did a proof of concept on this, we were actually scoped into, you have to do it on 2012 R2 on WMF4. And so we used WMF4, just PowerShell constrained endpoints. And there's a lot of documentation on TechEd or TechNet of how to create those, and we'll walk through kind of the differences. But we ended up just using constrained endpoints because we knew, hey, this technology is coming. By the time the service provider is ready to implement this, you know, the technology will be available. Let's just prove out that the concept works as we expect it to. And I'll explain the differences. But if you want to provide this now into a current environment, that would be possible. The difference is PowerShell just enough administration would provide an additional layer of security in terms of making it harder to get through the blast container, and I'll explain what that means. But it also would provide additional level of security, meaning that it's much easier to bring your logs together. So in this case of the proof of concept, it was actually log collection across this machine for what was being logged for command execution, logging into the applications, logging the environments, and unique identifiers were put into the logs so that you could collect those logs from all the different sources, bring them into one database, and then be able to see what's going on around the environment. The reason that's so important is that just enough administration constrained admin endpoint, you're logging into that as a user who has no access anywhere, and then you're kicking off commands as a user who has access in that application. You need to be able to associate what's happening and who ran it with the actual outcome. And that's where that logging consolidation actually came into play. And Jia is a big player in making that happen. Everything is actually written out into a file. I talked about this a little bit, but service management automation, there is a current version available. And that's what we originally proved the concept on. Here we're showing it on the public preview of vNext. That actually ships on the orchestrator media. So if you've got System Center Orchestrator, you pull up the media to the installation, you'll find service management automation is there. Just enough administration is also currently available, but it does require WMF5, and that's kind of one of the differentiators I was just talking about with constrained endpoints in WMF4. We are running, when I was looking at that PowerShell web access, that's hosted by a box that's Windows Server vNext, and again in the public preview. And again, it's possible to start that today. So here's the moving parts. So again, we figured, yeah, it could be coming from a tablet, could be coming from any a phone, any non-Windows machine. You can imagine the operator might actually get an alert on their phone while they're outside of work and say, oh, I actually need to make a change right away. Can I get access, you know, VPN in from my phone and make that change? Yes, sir? Yeah. So the question is, an RBAC model for SMA and whether it'll be present in the next version of SMA. I don't know if there's public information about that or not.
Not yet. So the next version he's talking about is in the public preview, which is basically the version of SMA that will run on the next version of Windows Server. So the one that has RBAC is the one that's cloud consistent with Azure Automation. So that's a little bit more ways out, because it'll take a dependency on the next portal for SMA, which will live in the Ibiza portal, or the preview portal that's now available in Azure, and then will be brought down in the cloud consistency story time frame as well.
Yeah. Even when there is an RBAC model, that would add an additional layer of security. I still would have taken the same approach. And the reason is, with Gia, I can control what's happening all the way down to what they can offer into individual parameters per commandlet. So I could enforce things like, hey, I'm going to allow you to create new virtual machines, but you have to follow these naming conventions. Things like that could be pretty easily implemented through Gia. So that was kind of a nice payoff. So that person obviously is connecting through PowerShell Web Access. I'm also going to demonstrate this just using PowerShell Remoting. Either way would be fine. If they're coming from Windows workstations, you can imagine they probably would be using PowerShell Remoting. If in WMF5, they can even do that through ISE. This is a little bit about what it would look like. Obviously, we demonstrated this a minute ago, but the idea is, in this use case, hey, I'm just going to have you go create a new organizational unit within that tenant environment. So they're going to say, within customer environment one, go create an OU by this name. Here's the LDAP path. They would kick it off. They see real-time status come back, and then it returns and says, yes, I did what you expected me to do. And Gia is the interface sitting on top of SMA that provides that additional level of delegation. And I'll let Charles explain. Charles is our SMA guy, and I'm kind of the PowerShell guy. So I'm going to hand off to him at this point and let him talk the rest of the way through the architecture.
All right, so Gia essentially is the gating factor, and it will hand things off that is allowed to be handed off to SMA. And we have, in this scenario, you see we're in the management pod area, and we'll get into an architecture slide in a second. So in that management pod, that top tier SMA, we have SMA servers, one or more. In our demonstration, we have one that has Gia installed, and we're receiving commands. And we'll show the environment as well. We have an invoker runbook and a distribute runbook. Distribute does what it says, and it will actually distribute the tenant runbooks into the tenant environments as desired. And the invoker will invoke those runbooks once they're there at that second tier. So essentially, things get kicked off, and we can have multiple tenants. Obviously, tenant 1, 2, 3, and 1. I didn't notice that the first time. So, but you get the idea. So, the first tier of SMA servers is the management level, and the second layer or the second tier of SMA servers are the tenants, and it could be one or many. In our case, we have one management and one tenant, but that's just for demonstration purposes. So we'll go into the design that we have here for Contoso, or it could be any customer. But really, for on the architecture on the right-hand side, the lowest level there is the sort of the management domain, or the overarching domain. And then they have the management layer. And then the tenants are on the top. And really, it's about where the operator sits, and that's kind of what we want to talk about here. That green square, I don't think the thing is effective here. That green square, for example, is one of the management nodes, and it has it has SMA, it has Gia, and it has the PowerShell web access, and then it has permissions to execute down upstream, I guess, in this case, for the second tier, which has SMA and any other things that you might need in that environment that you're going to run tasks against. So the architecture aside, I want to talk a minute at the bullets there. So everything within the solution you see here is in the box. We just created runbooks. We created proxy functions. We created PowerShell scripts. It's just nothing that we invented using some other technology or proprietary thing. You can do this today. You can do it in technical preview for both SMA and Windows Server. The web service endpoints are leveraged heavily from SMA to SMA communication. So we have two tiers. It could be three tiers. That would be really confusing, but you could do it because you're just executing SMA with a web service, and then you're calling another SMA instance with web service. So as long as you can access the two from SMA to SMA via web service, you're good to go. And then all runbook invocation and distribution is handled automatically. It's a runbook at the management layer. You click start at the distribution level, and if it looks at the tags of the tenant runbooks and says, I'm going to distribute these to all my tenants, or I'm going to distribute these to one tenant, or three of the five tenants, or whatever. Yeah? The question is it a one-time distribution or do you do it every time? If you wanted to keep the tenants clean, completely clean all the time, and they're just sort of runtime execution, then you can clean the runbooks off as soon as you execute them and then redeploy them each time. In our scenario, if we have updates, the gold copy lives in the management and we push down whatever it is. We do check to see if it's different, so maybe someone modified the tenant. We blow that out and put in the gold copy all the time. So you can destroy them each time and then reapply them. That is more secure, obviously, but it's completely up to you. It would just be a runbook that removes them afterwards and then you apply them before you execute. It would add time to the deployment or the execution time, but it's pretty trivial.
The two requirements we were up against there, one was, hey, we want to have somebody back in the corporate environment, not even in the management pod, but way back, you know, just sitting at their desk, be able to run, to author runbooks and check them into TFS, and then have something that regularly looks for something that's been checked off as a gold runbook that's ready for distribution, and go distribute that throughout the tenant environment, and also be able to select which tenants. And so that's where that's where both the distribution model and the tagging came into play.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit through the solution and starting out with the SMA multi-tier architecture portion of that. So we try to hit all the main points: scale, deploy, invoke, manage, and operate. And for SMA, we wanted to have the ability to scale the execution point, which is SMA. SMA is doing the work. So we wanted to be able to scale both at the management level and at the tenant level. So if you have let's say you have one tenant, but they're a bigger tenant than your other tenants, you might want four SMA instances in there, and you would just hit the load balanced endpoint instead of just the single SMA instance endpoint. So SMA scales really well for execution, and if you have increased workload, and it doesn't have to be the same per tenant. You could have two SMA instances in one tenant and five in the other, one in the other, and you would just obviously load balance that for better performance. So the deploy area of this is we wanted to create runbooks that were modular, easy to use, easy to understand, and easily executed from an invoker, meaning that I have a bunch of tenant runbooks that do specific little things: create OU, create a VM in the cloud or in the Azure, or create it on-prem. Whatever you could think of it as a task, it's a modular runbook that we then can easily invoke from something else. So the invoker level, which I'll show you that runbook when we get to the demo again, where the simple request comes from PowerShell Web Access or a remote session saying, get VM like he ran earlier, or create VM. That gets essentially translated into whatever the runbook actually is going to be executed, the one that lives in the tenant. And that runbook is invoked by the invoker from the management at the tenant level, and then it actually executes, does the work. In his case, it brings the information back up to the top layer. And we're actually going through multiple layers at that point. So it looks like it's nothing much going on, but it's actually going through a lot of different channels. So it's pretty complex, and it's secure. So the invoke stuff, we've talked through that a lot, so that's more important in the demo. And then the manage part, we have the ability to automate, because SMA has the ability to automate the import and export and distribution of runbooks. So we take advantage of that. Ideally, we wouldn't store the gold run books in SMA. In this instance, we are. But we would store them in TFS or VSO and then have another run book that says, what's the latest version of the gold? Pull it here and then distribute it out, sort of thing. So we would abstract that. SMA is a perfectly good place to put it, but it doesn't have the granular version control that those other products obviously do, the release management tools. You could use release manager, it doesn't matter, but that would be an added thing that we don't have in this demo. So think of the top level SMA is the repository, and then that stuff gets pushed down. And then of course the operate, Michael will talk more of in a little right now.
Well, you know, the only thing I was going to manage is or talk about was those same concepts apply to the PowerShell session. So by the same token, you can create the detailed configuration for your Gia endpoint, check that in the TFS, and have that delivered as well. Gia is actually delivered using PowerShell DSC, desired state configuration. So for the same way that we've thought about infrastructure as code, you can manage this environment using that. We've also released on Building Cloud's blog a SCOM management pack that will go out and verify DSC configurations and report back if there was a problem in a red light, green light sort of way. So you could even have monitoring sitting on top of this that would say, if one of my endpoints looks like it's no longer presenting the right configuration, they might have access to some bad commands, things like that, it could send an alert through SCOM and let you know across the infrastructure how that's going. So there's all kinds of ways that this could be extended. And we're not really creating anything new here. We're just extending using PowerShell the way that these things already work.
The DSC management pack?
It's out.
It's out. It's available.
Yep.
I'm Building Clouds. Are you going to talk about the Gia Toolkit UI thing?
I was going to demo it at the end.
Oh, cool. Yeah, cool. Okay. All right. The question was, when will the management pack be available for
DSC?
And we said it was out, and it's available on Building Clouds block. We have links and everything in the presentation as well. So a couple more. This last slide for the SMA talk, the three-tier model, trying to drive it home. It's actually two-tier in our demo, but it can be any number of tiers because we're just calling SMA from SMA from SMA. You can do the math and on the complexity of that. So essentially, the point of administration is driven by PowerShell and as constrained by Gia or constrained sessions. The management pod for SMA or WAP, you don't have to have Windows Azure Pack because you could run SMA headless. For runbook authoring and central, basically you have the pod that we showed in the architecture there. That SMA is what's controlling that management for SMA as well as the tenants, because we're distributing and invoking runbooks from that centralized location to the distributed deployment of the other tenant SMA servers. And then each tenant environment has a dedicated instance of SMA for run space isolation. So you can imagine the tenants don't want to share information or data. So they have an installation of SMA. It could be multiple instances, but at least one, obviously, to do the work. This came up mostly because you can, if you had network privileges, run remote commands against the tenant, but we didn't want to mess around with that. We wanted to put a stand up SMA in that environment, just and execute its runbooks via web service. It's just a more secure way, and then we don't have to make sure that we have full network connectivity across every port that we might want to do some form of automation from SMA from.
So. The other thing that we thought about is the downstream SMA instance could also be Azure Automation. So if for some reason that tenant environment doesn't have access to the internet, but you're managing assets for them both in like Azure VMs and virtual machines running for that tenant environment, you could actually just have the top tier both call Azure Automation and downstream SMA and accomplish it the same way.
Yep. And you're up.
So on the operator experience, and by the way, after this slide, we're going to start picking these things apart, and everything will be demo. So this is why we're really making sure everything's completely understood before we get there. The goal's trying to accomplish, I'm going to walk you through exactly what the operator module looks like, but it's really just a set of functions that makes things prettier for the operator. It's really important that they get real-time feedback, because they don't want to just kick off a command and then say, I don't know if this is working or not. So that's where bringing that status back, and bringing that status back across a two-tier model even, so that that top tier, it really has to be able to reach down and get information. And then really paid off having access from the web, again, so that you don't have to be on a Windows machine. If you have access to one, you kind of get the best breed experience, but everything is just as much accessible within the web access console. So I will switch over here.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
You're up first anyway.
All right. So, no. So we're going to dive into the SMA portion. As I talked about it and sort of said, we'll talk about that. Now we're going to talk about it. So this is the top tier or the management level SMA instance. So it's the one installed on the Gia SMA instance. And so it has the management, the two management. It's pretty lightweight as far as management runbooks is concerned. You have the distribute and the invoke, and I'll dive into those in a moment. But we also have what we're calling the tenant runbooks. So we have, what, nine or so tenant runbooks for stop VM, start VM, create VM, git VM. Michael used the git, essentially the git VM runbook when he requested the information from both Azure and from on-prem. So those are the actual tenant SMA runbooks that were created here and distributed downstream to the tenants. So they're in here. They could live in, like I said, a release management software, and then they would come in here and we'd be distributed or just exist as files, as gold files, and then be distributed. So I want to just delineate between management runbooks, because they live in the management stamp, and tenant runbooks, while they live here, they really are executed and distributed downstream. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the distribute runbook, and I'm just going to go probably open it up in ISE, because I could zoom in a little easier. And there's a lot to this, but essentially what it's going to do is it takes what's the management ID or the management endpoint, what's the tenant endpoint, and that those are the, obviously I've defaulted them to Gia SMA, which is our management SMA, and tenant 01, which is the one tenant that we have, and that could be applied across the board and be variabilized as needed. But essentially, I'm storing credentials in the SMA credential store. I'm also storing the web service endpoints by in the also as variables in the SMA asset store. And I've tried to genericize them so when this runs, it will get whatever management stamp you want to get the runbooks from, and it will put them wherever you want to, whichever tenant you identify. So you identify tenant 5, it would distribute the runbooks to tenant 5.
There was an important point there that you called out, that you're able to store things within SMA. So one of the big problems that solves is you can securely store your credentials within SMA. So that's how we're achieving the, hey, can I kick this off as an operator, and then it goes and SMA is handling it for me. Well, how does SMA ever get access into those environments? The SMA itself is able to securely store credentials, and then that's the payoff that we kind of got for free.
So I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but when we publish these, obviously you could dig a little deeper. But essentially this line here, I'm getting all the SMA runbooks where they have a tag of tenant, because I don't want to put the management ones down there. So I'm using the tags as filters. And if I could filter even further on, because I could put the name of the tenants in the tags, or I could store metadata anywhere, but it's easy enough for these demonstrations to store them in the tags. So type tenant is what I'm filtering by. If it was type tenant and tenant 5, then I would just get the runbooks that I want to send to tenant 5. So I get that. I collect information on them. I essentially create PS1 files of them so I can then use them as an import, because that's how the SMA import-export works. You get the definition, create a file, and then you could import it later. I'm doing some fancy things to see if the tenant runbook already exists at the endpoint. If it exists and it's the same, then I don't touch it. If it exists on the tenant and is different, which would mean something weird happened or it's an old version, we just blow out the old one and put in the one that we consider gold copy that's coming from the actual the management stamp or the gold copy. If it doesn't exist, then we go ahead and just create it. So it's, you know, big deal there. So that's really all this does is I could run it at any time, and after it's finished running, I will know that that tenant or that set of tenants has all the newest versions of the runbooks I want it to have. So that's the distribute runbook. And to prove that these actually exist on the other, because we're running SMA headless, we have multiples and I could connect into them, but right now the endpoint for the tenant is headless, so I went ahead and remoted into it and ran the command. I'm remoted into it and ran localhost against localhost, but you could see the ones that were tagged Gia are on that system. So that was what I executed here. So these are the downstream objects as they exist on the downstream SMA server. So that one's pretty interesting for distributing runbooks, and you can use that for anything. You don't have to use it for, you know, multi-tier. It might be useful for distributing runbooks to SMA servers, just period. That could be, you know, a sideways movement. I know recently I've had to distribute runbooks from CPS stamp to CPS stamp, so something like this would have been useful, but I just wrote some other, you know, simple PowerShell commands. So the other interesting part about all of this is the invoker, which is far simpler than that one, but is pretty powerful. And then we'll jump away from this, and Mike will explain the, I don't know what I believe to be more magical than just the SMA stuff that I built. So we're taking in for the invoker, which is invoked by the wrapper functions or the proxy functions that Michael has created. We're just simply asking for tenant, and obviously we defaulted to tenant one here. Give me the runbook name, and then give me the runbook parameters as a JSON string. Then we tear apart that JSON string and then pass it as a hash table. So we're getting the credentials needed based on the dynamic web service endpoint. So this could be any tenant. And then we basically create that web service endpoint. Then we see if the parameters, because you could execute a runbook without parameters, and like his Git one did not have parameters, so we wanted to compensate for that. So there is no parameters. We just start the runbook, dynamically start the runbook with the web service endpoint for the tenant, passing the credential as needed. And then if there is parameters, then we have to do a little bit more work tearing that JSON apart and then kicking off the runbook with those parameters. Now, you might be going, why are you passing JSON and turning it back into hash tables and stuff like that? In the experience for this project and the experience I had for automated tenant provisioning, where I'm going inside and outside of workflows and inline scripts, the hash table serialization gets kind of messed up. And the easiest way for me to protect the data and not have to worry about weird formatting things is to convert the hash tables, parameter hash tables, into JSON, pass that as a string, and then bring it back to life as a hash table, and then use it as is. Now, there may be better ways to do that, but it's the best way I've found to protect the data so it doesn't get all messed up. That's the technical term. So I believe at this point, I hand it over to you for the...
I just want to take a quick look. Let's see which machine we're on here. At exactly what's going on the Gia side. Let's actually look at what we've got configured on, as far as Gia is concerned, on the box I'm calling Gia SMA. So let's start off with the operator script. What this is really doing is creating the configuration for the Gia toolkit, the Gia endpoint, and applying it to this machine. So pretty straightforward. But you can see in that here string, we're actually declaring exactly which modules, which commands, which parameters, and what arguments per parameter should be accepted within this endpoint. Pretty straightforward. Almost everything's coming out of the operator module. There are a few things we needed that were just regular PowerShell command lists that we needed to add it on top of that. But you can see here as an example, I'm saying you can go create a new VM, but whenever you decide on the size, you can only choose between medium and large. So we're not going to support extra large VMs or something along those lines. The parameter argument validation could really be anything. I'll walk through these, but one of the things that I was really concerned about is, hey, if I give these operators free and clear access into SMA, they're going to have credentials to do all kinds of things, right? They could just import a new runbook that does something malicious, or maybe somebody who is able to gain access to their accounts could hijack their credentials to do something malicious. So we've got this start-runbook guard, and the whole concept there is just to simply wrap start-SMA runbook and then pass in the parameters, pass in the runbook you're going to name, but use Jia to say, okay, which specific runbooks should be allowed? And if it's not on this list, the operator should never have access to it. And the last thing is, you'll notice under security descriptor SDDL, that's where we're applying a SDDL, and I know that string is ugly and we're trying to figure out how to make it prettier, but what that's really saying is who can connect. So whenever I go over, you saw that demo script I had pulled up, the setup demo.ps1, I'm going to walk through what's it look like in a regular session, what's it look like in a constrained endpoint, what's it look like in a Jia endpoint. The way that you would access those is governed by that security descriptor. So what that means, there was kind of a challenge at one point to say, well, what if we need, like, in case of fire, break glass type scenario, right? What if we need to say, yeah, it's good that it's secured, but if that's the only way to get on the SMA box, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, in the event of some sort of troubleshooting event, a full administrator can get on with completely unrestricted privileges. So you can ACL your endpoints, you can control which commands should be available within each of those endpoints, and that's how you would achieve that. If I look real quick at the operator module, this is a work in progress before I release it publicly, and we are working on releasing all these things publicly, but there still are a few hard-coded things in here. Not too many, but you can see most of them are just wrappers. So I've got one that's just making sure that the SMA module is loaded. For this guest-SMA output, this is actually something that we will eventually transfer over into a runbook because we want everything to be handled upstream and downstream by the SMA instance itself. But I've got some interesting comments in. Oh, as soon as I get my RDP session back, there we go. The way that this is actually working is the wrapper for start-SMA runbook is kicking off the invoker. That returns the ID of the runbook that was kicked off. It then has to go back to the get-SMA output and say, okay, now that I have the ID for which downstream runbook was kicked off, go get the output from that machine using that downstream ID and return that output all the way back up to the web access session or to the PowerShell remote endpoint. So when Charles was talking about deserializing the parameters, handing those off, and then bringing it all the way back up, that actually came into play both in terms of triggering the downstream event and returning the output all the way back to the top. And then you'll see in cases like get-cloud-vm, that we really got to the point where we were just wrapping existing runbook kickoffs. So once you have those additional helper functions defined, it's really easy to say, okay, now I'm just going to be able to crank out functions as quickly as I can. In this case, what I want to present to the user is go get Cloud VM. So what's that actually going to do? Well, it's just going to kick off that runbook guard, pass it a name. If there's any parameters, I could have passed that as well. Then go get the output from the tenant. Once that output is received back, I may have some additional parsing because maybe the output that comes back from that runbook is not as pretty as I want to present to my operators. So this is a case where I'm using the wrapper idea both to wrap the functionality with a pretty commandlet name and to wrap the output coming back into that session environment to make it look a little bit friendlier for the user. What was actually happening in this case is you receive back this big string or this big set of arrays that contains information both from Azure and from VMM. So we're just going through and saying, hey, look, the only properties I really care about were name, status, and whether it was public cloud or private cloud. So consolidate that down into one nice clean set of objects and put that into a table, so table view. Similarly, we've got the same type of concept for new-private cloud VM and new-public cloud VM. And then if I were to scroll all the way down, you would see I've got things like, hey, I want to set how much memory is assigned to a VM, how many CPUs are assigned to a VPN, to VM. You'll notice, I don't want to spend all my time dealing with scrolling in RDP sessions, but I also added some logic into the functions that create new VMs. So even though it was a little bit of a time sacrifice for something like that, you can go get information and then do a sanity check. So in that case, I was doing get-cloud VM, go get the list of existing VMs, compare that to the name that's being put in for, hey, I want to create a new virtual machine, and that would allow you to provide a safeguard and say, does it match our naming standards, number one, and then does a machine by that exist by that name already exist, number two. And that may be an error that you're trying to correct across multiple clouds. You might have Azure plus two or three different private cloud scenarios that you're trying to support. So you can consolidate that. And these wrapper functions have really come in pretty handy in that aspect. So I'm going to kick this off. All that this script is doing is connecting over to that headless SMA box and creating three different PowerShell remoting endpoints. And you can tell by the names, I've got one just called operator, and that's full admin access. I've got one called PCE operator, which is PowerShell constrained endpoint, and then I've got one for Gia. So if I jump into now I'm operating in the context of that headless machine. This is exactly the same as if I was in that web access console. What we didn't show is for PowerShell web access, there's a way that you can set the default for which remote endpoint you should connect into. So rather than asking the operator to go in every time and scroll down, hit advanced, change into a different remote end space, for the web access session, we were just pointing it directly at Gia operator. In this case, I'm a full admin. So this is what I was talking about. Well, what if I need to give my administrators access into SMA to do work, or something goes wrong, and they want to be able to troubleshoot it using a full range of PowerShell commandlets? In case of fire, break glass. That's the scenario we're illustrating here. If you go the get command, you're going to see everything. And Gia puts it in no language mode, which means you really can't do almost anything as far as scripting is concerned, except for run the specific things that you've been assigned to. So in this case, you would have full language mode. You can do whatever you want. This will return me back to this machine. If I go in to session two, this is just a PowerShell constrained endpoint. This technology has been available for a while. You can do it today on Server 2012 R2. What I'm actually using to define this is a configuration file, which is not my favorite way, but it's definitely the easiest way. So to describe what this looks like, let's make sure that I'm on remote host. Yep, beautiful. There's actually a commandlet for new-ps session configuration, and that will generate the file for you. You just go in and kind of fill out the answers. So what this is actually saying is, down here, if I go to modules to import, it's saying whenever the session gets started up, which modules do I want to bring in? And then I'm saying which commandlets and which functions should be visible. And then back at the top, it says which language mode do you want to be in, and I'm saying no language mode. We didn't take this all the way because we knew that Gia was coming, so we didn't go through and hash out some of the additional aspects of it. As an example, if I try to run something like ping or some sort of executable from this environment, I don't have that locked out. So there's varying degrees of flexibility that you can accomplish here, but the point is this PowerShell configuration or constrained endpoint concept is something you can play with today. The reason that's so important is maybe you're thinking, okay, well, it's great that this technology will really start to solidify when I've got the next version of Server, the next version of SMA, and the next version of PowerShell. You can actually start testing this today just using constrained endpoints, and you could go ahead and start working on that operator module to say, here's what I think my operation center is going to need to achieve. Let's start working on some wrapper functions. Let's understand how these things are going to play together with SMA. And then as these next generation of products become available, you can start to actually introduce a lockdown environment. Because it's going to take some time to create that operator environment. So in this environment, you'll notice if I say get command, I do get a reduced set of commandlets. I can still go in here and say something like ops help. And that ops help is just another wrapper function. So if I wanted to make that some big, I'm going to display a bunch of text on the screen and really explain what each of these things can do and what parameters they would accept, I can make this as intuitive for my operator environment as I need it to be. Just like we mentioned before, I can still do a get-cloud VM. I can say new private cloud VM, new public cloud VM. I've got lots of options there. And I should get the same, it'll take a second for it to kick off, just like before, and then I'll get that same level of feedback. Whenever I exit this session and log into Gia, it'll be even more tightly controlled. I would be getting the additional logging, and I get the benefit, actually, of DSC managing that environment. So one thing about it with this PowerShell constrained endpoint, I would have to script out myself how to make sure that that endpoint is always available on that node. Since Gia is delivered using DSC, I get that benefit of apply and autocorrect mode in DSC. So if anybody goes in and screws up all of my endpoints, within 15 minutes, DSC is going to put it back the way it's supposed to be. So kind of that delineation of, well, what would I get out of WMF4 constrained endpoints versus what would I get out of Gia? That's the list that I would think about. I'm going to switch back over and try to think through if there's anything else that we want to.
I'm not sure that, I think we showed everything on the SMA side.
Just questions about how this would work or anything else that you would like to see? It's just that clear?
Does it make sense? I mean, do you understand the different levels and the tiers? Because that's the biggest, it's kind of complex, so we're worried about delivering the material. We tried to lay it out clearly.
Good.
And obviously this will be recorded, so you can send it to any colleagues that might want to reference it. I know I'm going to reference it heavily. So
each of the assets we've walked through today either have been released or will be released on Building Cloud's blog. What I want to do is, if you want to pull up the browser, I want to walk them through the toolkit real quick. So Bruno on our team has actually created a toolkit to make generation of these Gia endpoints very, very easy through a graphical editor. I'll show that real quick since we've got an extra 15 minutes. So the blog URL is, you can use ak.ms/bcb for Building Cloud's blog. We mentioned earlier that there's now a management pack available for monitoring DSC health status. So obviously you've got the conformance aspect of that, which is already present in DSC to say were configurations delivered successfully or not. This would provide kind of a red light, green light, ongoing ability to say, are these machines staying in the configuration they're supposed to be? And for the purposes of Gia, that would mean, are the endpoints still there as they're supposed to be? But just this week, Bruno released this toolkit helper. I already have it loaded up here on this machine. So if you're thinking about, I showed the operator script that was showing, yeah, this is the DSC that goes through. I've got a here string in there. Here's all of the commandlets that I want to load. Well, if I've got a really complicated scenario, what's the easiest way that I can go create that? How do I figure out that STDL string and the security descriptor and who's going to have access to each endpoint? So this gives you a GUI. You just provide a name that you want for the toolkit and endpoint. If you've got something saved off, one of the nice things about Gia is you can also put these things in a CSV file and just import them that way. So if you're working across a high number of different toolkit configurations, you can do that. I can just go in and say, okay, I want to be able to do, let's say, a get content. I could give somebody complete and total access to that command, or maybe I want to constrain it. So I'm going to only allow them to do path. Maybe I will let them do alternative credentials. Maybe I'm concerned about letting it run in the background, so I'm not going to do tail. And I can say add to toolkit. It brings those things in. So this is already creating that for me. I can manage that, obviously. I can also go down here, and if I check this box, I can type in who should have access. That'll create the security descriptor for me. When I go to script output, you'll notice that this is just using Windows forms, and that you see that PowerShell window in the background. This is all PowerShell happening behind the scenes. I'm not going to try to fight that. Here we go. It's just rendering this as a GUI as it goes. So what this actually creates is the full outputs for your Gia operator environment. So it includes the toolkit, the endpoint, the security descriptor, everything that might have been complicated going in. You can copy the clipboard. You can export it to a CSV file. You can import. You can kick off the test automatically. So this is honestly the only thing I use for whenever I'm just getting started. If I'm in a new environment, if it's an existing environment, it's not unusual for me to go in and just modify that existing here string if I know what I'm after. But if I've got a complicated set of things I want to create, this is the tool I've been going to. So this is brand new. He just released this last week. So that wraps it up. I'll switch back over here. We've had good feedback. We worked all the way through this as a proof of concept with a service provider. We've been talking to other customers about it. There's two or three now that are thinking about implementing as a proof of concept there as well. And everything within this is in sort of experimental proof of concept mode. So you're catching it at just the right time as far as getting more information. But this definitely details out an operations framework that anybody, whether it's a service provider or an enterprise, could build out. It would give you secure access across your environment if you've got remote locations. This really plays out well if you're fighting against the issue of, hey, we've merged several different organizations and we've got some remote site. I need to be able to do work over there. I want to be able to just kind of transfer commands back and forth, and I want to be able to institute that through my help desk, but I'm not going to give out the keys to the castle all over the environment. That's kind of the thing it was designed for. So. I think the one big pushback that I've heard is, well, I don't know if my operators are ready to go to a PowerShell environment. They really like the aspect of point and click. But that's where the creativity in those wrapper functions really comes into play. So you're only restricted by how creative you want to be with creating those wrapper functions. If you can make it just, I go to the console, I follow the document, I'm not even piping things, or I don't have to understand the SMA commandlets. I just have context to my commands. I kick off something that makes sense in my mind. If I get confused, I go into the help environment and it explains what they each do. You can make this something that really would almost handle the training for you. The beauty of PowerShell has always been the discoverability aspect, and I think that actually plays into the operators being able to work in a non-GUI type environment. So the one aspect of this I didn't really cover that we had thought about is, had we had more time, we probably also would have put Jia on the downstream servers, because you could effectively wrap Jia, you could wrap SMA in Jia at every level, so that if someone was able to hijack the upstream server, they still couldn't even kick off automation that would negatively impact the tenant environment. So you could really go Jia, Jia, Jia all the way down, and even if somebody's able to gain local access within that SMA environment, they couldn't kick off some sort of a hijack command into downstream functions. So that's one thing we didn't talk about today because we haven't had time to put it in place yet, but we're definitely thinking about that as well. So if you have any suggestions for things that we could add, if you have any questions about greater levels of detail, please feel free to come up, and we're happy to share our contact information with you. I'll let Charles walk through the last couple slides.
So not much here that you haven't seen already. This is the last session, so these are the ones we recommend that are related. Obviously, Jeffrey did a Jia session, so if everything we were talking about kind of was foreign and you're still interested, obviously go back and get a foundation in Jia. Same thing with SMA, Service Management Automation. Like we said, everything is available today. In fact, the toolkits and examples and everything to get you started is available today. What we actually demonstrated is we're going to be working on a white paper and some artifact downloads for you in the near future. So remember that building clouds AKA address, and of course the two Twitter accounts if you're into Twitter. I'm Orchestrator at Orchestrator Guy, and then there's a at building clouds for the blog itself. And as far as the track resources, again, we wanted to link you to some stuff, building clouds, PowerShell.org. There's the Jeffrey Snover's Twitter. He always is fairly entertaining to and educational to follow. And then, obviously, some other blogs out there that may be related. And then the rest of the slides are just the ones that come with every session. So please fill out the evals. Tell us what you think.
Especially for the evals, if after the fact today you think of, hey, you know, it also would have been great for you to touch on this additional subject or this additional level of detail, we're going to be presenting this session again a couple of more times this year, the PowerShell Summit for North America next spring, a couple other events throughout the year. So this was our first time taking the covers off of this in public. We've been talking about it with people, obviously, on a case-by-case basis, and we presented it out across the leadership teams at Microsoft. But anything you think of later, you're welcome to come get our business cards. If you want to get in touch later and think about how this would apply to your environment, they're probably not going to drop ship us out to travel out and work as consultants, but we're more than happy to have a call and just kind of say, here's the things we're thinking about, here's how it might be unique for your environment, things like that. Feedback is wonderful.
Yes. And with that, thank you. And you got 12 minutes back, or you come up, ask questions, or use the mics. It's up to you. We're here. So.
Great. Thank you.